You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Prehistories Podcast. Can't believe we've got this far. We explore in this podcast how prehistory is portrayed in the present day. Last episode, we talked about the role of prehistoric themes in folk horror, and we talked for so long that it's not only become a double episode, it's a triple episode. I don't really mind, because it gives me longer to organise the next story. If you have any ideas for what that could be, whether it's a book, or a film, or a TV show, or anything else, then let me know. You'll find me on Twitter at PrehistPod. Or you can find me on the Archaeology Podcast Network and send us a message. Today, I continue talking with Beck Lambert, who is a postgraduate archaeology researcher on the Underpasses Are Liminal Places project, and David Southwell, who's the creator of Hookland, an author, and he also created Folklore Against Fascism. They're all big horror fans as well. We take in a few other old and more recent folk horror films and TV shows. Enjoy. So sorry, everyone. We have had such difficulty with recording for some reason, and I think it's just everybody's Wi-Fi and trying to be all on at the same time.
You're being very positive. I think there's some beings out there that don't want this going out.
I think you might be right. I think, yeah, I'm trying to be positive, but you know that behind the scenes I've been cursing. And we've lost, sorry, I should have said many minutes ago that we've lost Lauren, and I hope to speak to Lauren again. Now we seem to have lost Simon. So yeah,
this is becoming
angry
survival horror. One by one, by one.
Battle Royale goes.
Oh gosh,
Huck Pod.
Yeah, one of my friends made me watch Battle Royale. That was traumatic. Wow.
It's a guidebook. It's a handbook.
You see, I can't even watch Shaun of the Dead again. I can't. Oh. I'm such a wimp. Anyway, but I never caught these Christmas. They were radio shows, weren't they? The M.R. James BBC at Christmas.
They were brought back by Mark Gatiss, but there was a tradition of doing the sort of ghost story at Christmas. A lot of the most fondly remembered ones are the M.R. James adaptions that they did.
And it kind of goes back, it's a very old tradition, isn't it? I mean, that's what you get in Dickens, is that tradition of telling ghost stories at Christmas with Christmas Carol and stuff.
It's very much that sense of, you know, the Christmas ghost story. And, you know, the BBC adaptions are very much loved. And I think for many people, it's their first experience of M.R. James. Excuse me. So they are loved, but the original James stories are deeply loved, and you will find fans of them everywhere, because it really is quite often a wonderful sense of, as I've been saying, of, you know, the past infecting the now. That sense that places are infected by the past, people are infected by the past. There's wonderful sense of doom echoing across temple distance in James, and his use of antiquarian, you know, characters, you know, the people who are unearthing and digging up and digging what they shouldn't be and researching into the past and bringing them into a horror and into a sense of doom and of being pursued by the past, infected by the past, and the past not being a safe place. Even if you are an academic, even if you are somebody from that antiquarian background, they're very powerful stories, and they've lost none of their ability to convey a sense of place, a sense of past, and a deep haunting since they were first written. They are as good today as they were when he first penned them.
Absolutely.
And the BBC adaptions have been, you know, are loved by many, but the actual M.R. James, I think he's probably now almost as popular as he was in his heyday. And he's certainly one of the classic writers. I think we talk of quite often of folk horror as being something, you know, only of cinema, but it certainly goes back much further. And it does involve writers like Macken, James, Aikman, Algernon Blackwood, who I think probably wrote the best folk horror story of all time with The Willows. But James is a wonderful, wonderful writer. And I think, you know, I'm quite often, I've sat in pubs with people saying, I know he probably wouldn't have liked me very much, but I can still love and appreciate his work at a very deep level. And I think he's a huge influence on if it wasn't for Macken and for James, and if you could sort of have a literary DNA paternity testing, you would find that they had fathered so many of us and so many of our works, you know, across so many different genres of horror and of sort of the eerie and uncanny. They are very powerful figures.
Mm.
And certainly with James, you absolutely get that sense of the transgressive nature of the act of digging and disinterring and of physically going into the past via the ghost soil is really powerful. And I think has sort of set the tone for a lot of the use of archaeology in a lot of films and an awful lot of stories that have come after him.
Yeah. As an archaeologist, you kind of, you are trained to forget those more supernatural ways of viewing the past, I guess, and the idea of ghosts. But as I mentioned before about the sleeping on a cemetery, how you forget all of your objective training when it's nighttime and there's a skeleton scratching underneath your tent.
Yeah.
And this idea of ghosts is so deep, isn't it? The ghosts of Roman centurions or the ghosts of old ladies that used to live in the house and that you're in now. And it's almost a manifestation of that idea that you are temporary in whatever place you're in.
Absolutely.
And the past is there still. And as you say, the past infecting the now, David.
I think there's also a sense for a lot of us writers, we feel a deep kinship with archaeologists because you are world builders, you are fellow enchanters, you are creating ways, and the work you do creates these portals into the past. You recreate the past, you enchant us, you bring us into its living story. And we kind of feel a kinship because quite often it's very dull, very lonely, not particularly well rewarded, and quite often, you know, nobody sees all the hard graft that goes into it, whether it's a story or it's a, you know, piece of archaeology. You know, the work is quite
often invisible.
They seem
very similar. Yeah,
it's and I think there's a real sense of kinship. I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of writers, I think, enjoy creating archaeological characters and situations. Is, you know, I often tell the story of when I was a child in the 1970s of finding a Mesolithic flint head in the Salvation Army fields, and just how, you know, taking that object to the local museum and being told what it was, and it created this sort of the temple shades. You know, that field was never just a field again. It was somewhere where the people of the Neolithic had lived and hunted, and it completely enchants the landscape and gives this layer of story and gives you eyes to see the landscape of the now through what it was. And it does, not in a traditional sense of haunting, but you do, archaeologists, when they engage and they give us these amazing stories, they do make a haunted landscape. They do populate it with ghosts, with people, with what was there before. And that's a really very powerful piece of magic. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I think you will always find that there are a lot of writers who are always very interested in portraying archaeology and archaeologists, because we recognize that's what you do. You know, you may, you know, not see yourselves as enchanters and world builders and you know, openers of the ghosts, but that's certainly how you come across to us.
Wow. I mean, doing this podcast for several years, I've been looking at the role of writers and authors, storytellers, and the role of archaeologists and how they come together, and or indeed don't. And I got the sense that an archaeologist trying to tell stories is never as successful as a proper storyteller using the archaeology to tell stories, because the storytelling is so important to get right, and the archaeology can be picked up. But for an archaeologist to tell stories, you'd need so much training. But I love the way that you've just turned that round on me, David.
Yeah.
to suggest that world building. And okay. I think I can think of particular archaeological writers who definitely world build for me, like you mentioned. Oh gosh,
what, Mark Edmonds?
Mark Edmonds, thank
yeah,
you.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Mark Edmonds, definitely. And
Jaquetta Hawkes in her way.
Oh yes,
yeah, you know, yes. I mean, Eland is just phenomenal.
I really should feature that somehow.
But then you have to think as well. Sorry, just to interject, you know. So Jaquetta Hawkes was living with the chap who ran Inspector Calls.
Oh, Priestley.
So she was in a relationship with Priestley, yes, by the time she wrote Eland, and also she...
Oh, and he is such an amazing storyteller.
Exactly, and she moved within the same circles as, like, Paul Nash and so on, and I think... And of course, Pigott and Nash formed a friendship when Nash went to look at the Avebury works in the 30s.
Right.
And I think that there's this, and this is something that I really enjoy. I'm finishing up a postgraduate degree, which I've enjoyed very much, but I'm stepping away from formal academia in a sense, because I find it constricting at times. It allows me now, I can now work openly and freely with writers, with visual and sonic artists, all sorts of people, and we feed off each other. So as David would say, you know, someone might ask me about something archaeological, and I can give them the nuts and bolts, the facts, so to speak, of, say, excavations and so on. And then they take that and they go with that, and then they come back to me with what they've done, and then that inspires me in my research. And it's just like this beautiful connection that is just opening worlds.
I always tell archaeologists, seduce artists, seduce writers, seduce magicians, because you have something we want, which is this: archaeology provides the best wall to bounce ideas off of. It's one of the best ways of breaking out of current paradigms, of thinking differently, because the past is sometimes entirely alien, and you have so much to offer creative people. It is the wall we want to bounce off of. But we need that engagement. And sometimes that engagement has to have a collaborative equity where it isn't all about theory. We want the nuts and bolts. We want the details. But if you want to start changing the perception that archaeology is not all just about Stonehenge or the Orkneys, you've got to seduce the writers and the artists and the musicians and the storytellers to tell the different stories you want told.
Yes.
And to form those partnerships. Because when I was creating Hookland, one of the first things I did was work out what the archaeology of Hookland is, how many barrows, how its Saxon graves rival Beaconsfield and Swallowcliff, and I was using the archaeology I knew and I loved to bounce and to create, it can, as Rebecca says, it can create some wonderful relationships. And one of, again, I think the things that we share and the kinship between writers and archaeologists is an absolute obsession with place and focus on place. And we actually have very similar languages, quite often very similar agendas to tell stories about place and the past. And we need to be working together a lot more. And I think, you know, I just know as a writer how much I am inspired, how much I get from the archaeological community, from individual archaeologists, people like Ken Brophy, Lorna Richardson, have really inspired my work and have been a very powerful influence. And it is, you know, we want to do more of this, and we should be doing more of this, because it it's a very different audience quite often. We are just very different audiences. And
exactly.
When we work together, we really do become, you know, a very powerful intersection, and we can speak in places where I, as a writer, don't normally speak. Being invited to speak at TAG, a section called Hooklandia, was just mind-blowing to me.
It was wonderful.
It was just.
Yeah,
I just don't often get that opportunity. But at the same time, if the narratives in archaeology, which I sometimes I'm trying to showcase in my work, are the ones which are not, you know, don't tend to break through in the media, and we can help each other, and we should be collaborating a lot more.
I agree.
Our joint reach can be so much more engaging and so much more powerful.
Yeah.
And especially at a time when folklore and archaeology and the past itself is weaponized by some of the worst far-right nationalistic forces, it's even more for us to sort of work together to say, it never was like this. This is never how it was. And these are the alternative stories, and the stories that need telling, I think, is a very important thing we can do as well.
I mean, for me personally, Hookland has been a huge source of inspiration for myself and in developing my various research projects. And I'm really glad that you mentioned the Hooklandia session at TAG, because for myself, not just as a person who was brought up in a family which, you know, was steeped in folkloric traditions and so on, but as an archaeologist, that was just an absolutely phenomenal session. And what really excited me was that through your work, your imagination, David, you inspired these archaeologists to create these absolutely amazing papers. I mean, Martin Barber's Midsummer Murders one was just phenomenal. And also the fact that we had a fairly small room for that session, because Kenny didn't think we were going to get a huge number of people. And literally, Kim, I don't know if you were there, It wasn't just standing room only. There were people that, like, Julian Thomas was stood in the corridor trying to listen and stuff. And for me, it was just wonderful. It was just so affirming and stuff. It was amazing.
Was that at Chester?
No, that was at London.
Oh, London. I didn't manage to get to much of the London one, which was very frustrating. But I did run a session at London, and it was about what have we done for the Romans. I work at a Roman site. Well, yes, I do for a short while longer, in a vein of, you know, how have we presented the Romans. And we worked with Caroline Lawrence, an author of children's books.
Oh, yeah, she's lovely.
Absolutely lovely lady. And I was so adamant as presenting that, you know, what we as archaeologists do is not that, it is important, but it doesn't get to people, like you say, David. It doesn't have the reach, and it's through working with authors like Caroline and like yourself and so many others. So we've featured, for instance, Margaret Elphinstone's book, Gathering Night. Oh, gosh. And now I forgot the name of it. But I think it's called that early on. And she worked with Caroline Wickham-Jones on that to do the research for that. An absolutely amazing book as a result of it, and such amazing stories. And some of my most kind of not gratifying, but moments where I feel so much pride and so much creativity is working with writers and artists and, you know, like, for instance, working on the First Foresters. And
that's one of my favourite books. I love it, Kim.
It's so wonderful,
much,
isn't it?
So much.
It's, you know. I mean, I don't feel like I had that much to do with it, but that's my imposter syndrome there, I think. But, you know, working with Matt Ritchie, who is Forestry and Lands Scotland archaeologist, who has these inspired ideas to create these wonderful resources, and working with a huge number of artists and photographers and writers and archaeologists to create beautiful books that you can still get for free. You can download the PDFs for free. Working with Alex Leonard, who is a wonderful cartoonist from Orkney, on creating characters,
yeah.
Neolithic and Mesolithic characters. Yeah. That was just some of the funnest time in my life.
And the images in that. First Foresters, especially the image of when the imagining of people digging out the henge ditches and when you've got the timber posts and how they imagine it would be, and you've got that shamanic type character. For me, that's one of my favourite archaeological images because it just, it's alive. It's completely, the colours are so vibrant. There's movement. It's a static image, but it's full of movement and energy. And it's just phenomenal. Sorry, I will be quite, but that is just, that is what I want to convey. And
the thing is, when you then take that image back and walk that landscape, it grants you this wonderful, powerful connection that, as I say, it is not just this portal into the past. It infects your imagination in a wonderful way. And those images are so wonderful and give such a connection back to place, back to the material. And it's fantastic storytelling. And I think it's a very transformative storytelling because you will not be able to think about the history in the same way. You will not be able to think about the place in the same way. It has changed you. And that's wonderful. It's deeply wonderful.
Yeah, this is a manifesto, really, isn't it? That I've been saying this throughout my podcast. Well, to start with, I think my podcast started as look how the archaeology has been misrepresented in this book. And it soon became a much, much deeper appreciation for storytelling over the strict kind of interpretations of certain archaeological things.
Yeah.
And this, and the creativity of working together to create something that's more than any archaeologist could ever create on their own is just so wonderful. I mean, I think the manifesto is that, you know, archaeology is not just grubbing around in the dirt, although that is a very enjoyable part of it.
Absolutely.
It is about us, isn't it? It's about our humanity and about who we are and where we have been and our future.
And I think it's also about this thing that, and this is stuff that I address within my research, is that you don't have to go out into the far reaches of certain plains in southern England or dilapidated castles. It's everywhere. Archaeology, from the minute you, I would say it's in your home, but also the minute you step out your door, there is archaeology everywhere. And archaeology doesn't have to be something that's hundreds or thousands of years old. It could be something that was made last year. And the thing is, it's how we connect. And that's what I really enjoy. And with my work and the way that I present things, yes, I could present interpretations and data analyses in very academic, formal contexts, reports. But I love creating these stories, you see, and drawing on folklore and drawing on the uncanny and, if we go into this underpart, but there could be portals in there and all these things. And, there's a pylon. Yeah, it's the conveyor of the hum, but the hum isn't modern. The hum has been with us since the beginning. And then you bring in the archaeological theory, so to speak, through linking the hum and animism and stuff. So there's this, the heartbeat of archaeology, the DNA of archaeology is running through all these things, but we're just presenting it in a different way. And hopefully that will capture the imaginations of people and get them thinking, well, maybe I'm going to go out and have a look and explore and see their, not just the wider world, but even their local, landscapes with different eyes and excited eyes,
The big thing for Hookland really is partly you ask what landscape punk has to do with it. I would say landscape punk is just taking it back to the very basic thing that places layers of memory, layers of story, layers of information.
Yeah.
And it's about representing and telling that and allowing that to manifest. And what I'm trying to do in Hookland is offer re-enchantment, offer eyes of awe onto the familiar. And the familiar can be urban settings, it can be rural settings. But it's just to give people new eyes. And that's archaeology to me. It gives you a new eye, it gives you new eyes, and it gives you an exploration of the layers of place, the layers of story that make it, and the layers of information. It provides those navigation, it provides those eyes of wonder. And archaeology is a very sublime thing to me when I'm using it and when I'm working with it, and certainly when I'm trying to represent it in Hookland. I try and represent it in those terms because I think that's what it really is at its core for me.
Well, I think that's a good place to bring this to a close. A wonderful description of what archaeology can be. All out of this the folk horror, which I was obviously facing with trepidation, but I think it is all around us, and this the fear of the that comes is part of the affective nature of the past that's with us. It provokes lots of emotions. One of them can be fear, others can be awe and wonder and so on. So I think that they're all quite closely allied. But I wanted to just say thank you to Beck Lambert. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Me too. It's been really great. And thank you, David Southwell.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you both for your contributions. You are the two last people standing. Everyone else has been kicked off.
Yeah. We survived.
But hope
we did. Someone's watching over us, David.
Which is wonderful. And I will, as long as it's all right with you, share your accounts on the show notes on Twitter and so on, so that I can
thank
so
you.
People can get in
pleasure.
Contact
thank
with you.
Thank you.
And hopefully I will manage to talk to Lauren and Simon again.
I do hope so.
Yeah. But I'm going to bring our talk to a close for now.
No problem. And thank you. And thank you so much, Kim, for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it.
I don't often get invited to be amongst archaeologists, and it's always a pleasure when I am. And this has been a really special pleasure. Thank you so much, Kim.
Oh, thank you. It has been really wonderful.
The pleasure's ours, I would say. I know we say this all the time, David, but, you know.
You're not. I'm just going to say pa. And
I know you're
it,
going to say pa, and I'm going to throw that pa straight back at you.
It really has been lovely, Kim, to be, to talk to Simon, to talk to yourself, to talk to Beck. I'm really looking forward to what Lauren's going to say.
Yeah.
The work you do, it isn't about ink stasis. It lives, it inspires, it bleeds out in ways that sometimes you don't even get a chance to track. And to be part of the conversation has just been lovely. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome, but it's been my pleasure.
On the third instalment of the folk horror genre for Prehistories, I get to finally talk to Dr. Lauren McIntyre, Senior Osteoarchaeologist at Oxford Archaeology and a horror aficionado who suggested this whole thing. We finally got our tech sorted, so look forward to that next month.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV Traveling America, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.